As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Starcast, the German football pod, brought to you by The Athletic. In today's episode, Bayern and Dortmund both win ahead of their big meeting on Saturday, David Alaba becomes the new Michael Ballack, Leverkusen are looking pretty boss with a Z at the end, and Julian Nagelsmann goes from suited to booted as Leipzig lose again. All this and more in Stahlcast. Hello dear listener, and hello Christoph Biermann and Kevin Hatchard, our Stahlcast Double Trouble regulars. But before we take an Andy Möller-style dive into the heart of the matter, here's a quick reminder that you can read all The Athletic's fine football coverage and plenty of other sports for just £1 per week at the moment. Go to theathletic.com/StarcastPod. So, hello, Christoph and Kevin. Where should we start? I think we have to start with Leverkusen. We haven't really mentioned them much this season, but they are back among the best teams, still unbeaten, 3 wins, 3 draws, and a pretty convincing showing against Freiburg, where bigger and better teams have struggled in the past. 4-2. Christoph, is it time to take them more seriously?
The question is, to what extent to take them seriously? Are they contenders for the international football? Yes, they were from the beginning on. Are they contenders for the Champions League? I still have my doubts. So I think they are now where we could have expected them before the start of the season. But on the other hand side, we have to congratulate Peter Bosz that he found a way to let Bayer play in a way that the missing Kai Havertz is not as much felt as we could have expected.
How has he done that?
It's so funny. I mean, it's the old thing. We had it discussed it with Leipzig and Timo Werner. Yeah. So you have your star player is gone. Timo Werner in the RB Leipzig context and Kai Havertz at Leverkusen. The two outstanding players. And what always coaches say, there are options for others, they could fill the gap and develop and flourish and so on. And I think you can see it interestingly in the case of Bayer Leverkusen with Lucas Alario, who was a kind of, between the bench, sometimes playing the lesser important matches. And now he seems to become the top scorer for Bayer Leverkusen. That probably also has to do with Kevin Volland not playing there anymore, so to give him space. But always, it's not the kind of miracle solution, but to distribute the job that Havertz had on many different shoulders, and very often it doesn't work, but in the case of Leverkusen, it obviously works. Same goes for Leipzig.
It's interesting because I think they do need more consistency from guys like Moussa Diaby, Nedim Amiri, who scored a brilliant goal against Freiburg at the weekend. They also need more from Leon Bailey. We know the talent's there from Bailey, but he just hasn't been able to show that on a regular basis. I think if he can hit top gear a bit more often, then that's going to really help Leverkusen. I think we'll learn a lot in the coming weekend because they've got a Rhineland derby against Borussia Mönchengladbach, and I think that's a really good sign of where they're at, because the last time they went to they faced Gladbach in the Bundesliga, they beat them. Kai Havertz was instrumental in that, so we'll see how they get on against the Fohlen Elf without him. I still think they're a little bit short. I still think they're too profligate in front of goal. I think they did at least have a good response to going a goal down and nearly having Sven Bender sent off against Freiburg. He had that red card downgraded to a yellow after VAR. But I still think there's a bit of fragility there, and I still think they miss too many chances at the moment. So the talent's there. They haven't yet proven that they have that consistency.
Well, it's the old story, really, isn't it, with Leverkusen? Once those players have more consistency, I'm thinking of Bailey, they don't tend to stick around. It's only because they are inconsistent that they're perhaps still playing this season. But I saw this interview with Peter Bosz in the Bundesliga magazine for their corporate internal communication. It's being sent, to all the clubs and the stakeholders. And he was basically railing against this view of him as an extreme coach who only knows one way, thinks that some of the subtleties are being overlooked. Is that fair, Christoph? Do we perhaps sometimes unnecessarily slap this label on him that he's just this extreme pressing guy and doesn't know anything different?
Actually, I've never seen him like this. I would call them ideological coaches. So they have a one great, fantastic idea about football should be played. There are some around, but I think Peter Bosz doesn't belong to them. So he is probably not the total flexible guy who develops always a different idea where he comes to and adapts completely to the abilities of his team. But I've never seen him like this kind of a stubborn, only plan A kind of coach.
Well, he's partially to blame, I think, for this characterization of him, because he said last season, if plan A, I don't need a plan B, I just need plan A to work better. So he does have his ideas. I think the really interesting thing about Bosz is that you kind of look at some of their failings this season, and I know they're unbeaten, but there have been games that they probably should have won that they didn't win. But that was kind of not his fault, because the system works in the sense that they're creating lots of chances. They are playing well in games, but they haven't necessarily taken those chances. And you kind of see him on the touchline, a bit like a frustrated parent, kind of shaking his head sometimes, because so many chances get missed. And I think there isn't much heat on him, and there shouldn't be much heat on him, because actually where they haven't quite hit the heights this season hasn't really been down to structural issues. I think tactically they're playing well. It's just been down to the execution of basic situations in front of goal.
Yeah, I think parents usually get frustrated if their children score too much, but maybe that's for another day. But let's move on. Bayern and Dortmund are both on 15 points, which is good to see for the neutrals of this league. They both won in very laboured and very uninspiring, but maybe professional circumstances. Bayern went to Cologne, 2-1 win, never really threatened. And Dortmund went to their bogey team of Arminia Bielefeld, where they have hardly won in recent decades, albeit with the caveat that Bielefeld haven't always been in the same division, and came away with a 2-0 win courtesy of two goals from Mats Hummels, who might not make the next couple of games with a hamstring injury, but is cautiously optimistic that he might come back. I think we should start with Dortmund. Christoph, I think for much of the game, it looked like the typical Dortmund game that we've seen so many times. They are playing quite methodical. They're opening things up. They are keeping the same kind of rhythm. Bielefeld defend well. Nothing really happens. And then it all comes down to result. When they make the breakthrough and they come away with 3 points, people are saying, oh, yeah, that's just what a good team does. They don't play particularly well, but they win and they don't concede, and that's wonderful. If they don't, then we're talking about Dortmund being uninspired and lacking that energy and that drive. Is something really different this year with Dortmund getting these kind of results, or is it just all shaping up for one more epic defeat against Bayern, and we're back to square one next week?
At least they managed to win these games. And also they had a similar match in the Champions League against St. Petersburg, and were also winning, not in style, but in the end it all worked. And but I have my doubts if they are flying as high or high enough to be a real contender for Bayern Munich on the next weekend. Also, it will be, as now the whole Bundesliga is a ghost match, so there will be no extra from the yellow wall or from 80,000 packed arena in Dortmund. And but at least I think we have to praise them for that. At least they are winning these games. And last season we've seen a lot of games where they actually didn't win it.
I was on commentary duty for that game in Bielefeld at the weekend, and you kind of saw something that we don't see that often in the Bundesliga, because basically you had one team that had no interest in getting forward. So Bielefeld set up with a back five, which they don't normally do, and it was all about containment. I think they had one or two breaks, but nothing really sustained. And you don't often see that, a team that just says, right, we're going to see if you can break us down. Usually they'll at least have a go at some stage, and we didn't see that from Bielefeld. So that was an unusual challenge for Dortmund. And I think without Erling Haaland, they were still able to pick their way through. They were still able to create chances defensively. They looked solid. I know they weren't given that much of a test, but they did have total control. I did think Jude Bellingham was outstanding. Again, great energy, always wants the ball, always trying to make things happen. One fantastic cross for Akanji in the first half, and Akanji really should have scored. And when you've got a presence like Mats Hummels at set pieces, that can make a big, big difference. So I thought that was as good as they could have hoped for in a way against an ultra-defensive team without their star striker. I think that's a bit of a confidence booster in a way.
I think it's an interesting similarity between the Bayern and the Dortmund match, that they both rested their best striker, and that you could see some rotation, because I think that's a... That will be one of the main stories in weeks to come for the teams that play international football, how to rotate properly to avoid injuries, but always have the best possible team for the most important matches. I think it's a very complicated a process of finding out how to do this. You can, when we later on talk about RB Leipzig playing at Borussia Mönchengladbach, we had similar things to discuss. So this will be interesting how coaches are doing this, and I think sometimes they have to take risks. Bayern and Dortmund didn't take many risks, because obviously the quality gap between them and their opponents is so big. But for example, Hansi Flick was complaining after the win at Cologne about that it needed too much energy to win there, and I think you can see the mind frame the coaches are having. So to not completely invest your energy into this kind of matches and still get away with 3 points.
Yeah, that's certainly a key factor. What I found interesting is that maybe, in a strange way, the game against Bruges might be more important for Dortmund, at least in the short run. I think the money from the Champions League has become so important for Dortmund as a revenue stream that that they can directly influence, whereas everything else is not within their control at the moment. Having lost against Lazio the opening game of the group stage is absolutely vital for them to beat Bruges, and maybe on another day Erling Haaland might have played in the Bundesliga and they would have rested him against Bruges, but now things are a little bit different. I have two questions or wonder out loud. One, can Lucien Favre or will Lucien Favre stick to his preferred system with four at the back against Bayern? Or will he revert to the slightly more reactive three at the back and try to go quite long and direct as he did with some success in the first half of their last meeting back in May? And the second question is, do we think that Dortmund have what it takes to withstand Bayern defensively? I guess these two are connected, or maybe it's one of the same, two aspects of the same question. Christoph?
I think a lot of depends on if Mats Hummels can play or not. I think if he plays, the chance that they will play with four in the back instead of five or three, whatever you say, is bigger. But my gut feeling would be that even when he's playing, that there will be a kind of safety first policy, because I think it's very difficult to beat Bayern with a lot of high press if that's not your natural style. I mean, Hoffenheim did it very well, but they in general play a different football. And so my gut feeling would be that we will see a more defensive approach from Borussia Dortmund against Bayern.
I think that's right. And I think the key will be to stay in the game, because what we saw in the Super Cup was that they can hurt Bayern. I know Bayern, you know, maybe it wasn't their best performance, and it obviously is in the middle of this mad fixture list that they have. But I think Dortmund will take a lot of positives from that game. Even though they lost, they created lots of chances and scored some good goals. So I think they will feel they can hurt Bayern, but it is about not doing what they've done, certainly in away games against Bayern, which is be blown out of the water in the first few minutes. They have to hang in there. They have to make sure that they're still in the game with an hour gone. And they know they have players like Sancho, like Haaland, who can make things happen in the blink of an eye. So I think that is the key. They cannot afford to find themselves a couple of goals down early.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Should be very, very interesting. I think for the sake of the Bundesliga, we would be quite welcoming a Dortmund win. But let's see what will happen. In the meantime, another point of discussion is David Alaba's contract unlikely to be getting renewed at Bayern. Herbert Heine, the president of the German champions, came out on Sunday and said their offer had been withdrawn after the Alaba camp still hadn't agreed to extend and told Bayern to think again and up their contract offer. That will not happen. And the reason why I compared him to Michael Ballack earlier in the intro is because, of course, that's exactly what happened when Michael Ballack refused to renew his contract. Bayern, having waited for a long time, very publicly and very proudly, I might say, withdrew their offer and said they are no longer prepared to keep employing him. And of course, the outcome of this was him moving to Chelsea. As you would recall, Christoph, because I remember you broke the story at the time.
Did I?
You did, in Süddeutsche Zeitung.
The Ballack story. Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. That's a long time ago. But with the Alaba story, I find it all very strange and odd. And I don't know, I can't make my head around this, because is it really true that Alaba is asking for so much money in the middle of this huge crisis? And that's the one part I don't understand. I understand the other side, that Bayern had set a deadline that was end of October. We're past it now, and then they decided to jump out of this out of these talks or whatever it was, and wrangling or so. And there is something I don't really like about it. But you're an insider at Bayern, Rob.
Hardly. I mean, my information is that Bayern did make a pretty good offer. Alaba wanted a lot more money still, up to 20 million euros. That's the latest I heard. Over 5 years. Plus a huge sign-on fee, so that is more than 100 million euros for a player who is, you know, in the prime of his career, but won't have much resale value. And I think Bayern, as has often been the case, feel that they have to make a stand, not so much out of principle. I don't think they have a problem paying that kind of money. They do indeed pay the same money to Robert Lewandowski and Neuer and perhaps one or two others that they don't mention in public, but it is more a case of not, I think, giving in to what they feel is unreasonable and would create huge inflationary pressure on the rest of the squad's wages, because you can, of course, expect three or four other players looking at that new deal and thinking, okay, where am I in this? I'm at least as good as David. I want the same money. And then, you know, you suddenly find yourself in a situation where you're kind of Barcelona and everyone's on 25 million euros. So that is the problem.
When you look at, so if you make an imaginary list of the top players of Bayern, you would think of course, Robert Lewandowski and Manuel Neuer and Thomas Müller and Kimmich and then at the fifth or sixth or seventh position, I would say you will find David Alaba. And I completely understand Bayern that they don't want to, as you said, start this kind of inflation where at the end you have to pay just too much money in the middle of a very complicated situation financially, even for Bayern, complicated situation.
The flip side to this is that, of course, they are losing one of the most respected and liked players, a huge fan favorite, a bit of a symbol of the club, having moved there in his late teens. And of course, you know, finding a player of Kalaba's quality will also cost money, and maybe it is a false economy to save 3 million euros a year, but then you have to spend 45 million euros to buy the next Alaba next time. So it is tricky, but I guess that Bayern feel that the way that negotiations have been handled by Pini Zahavi's agent, where a lot of those secret meetings turned out not to be so secret because media were tipped off immediately when they happened or beforehand, I feel it's also to do with something a little bit more personal, that they don't want to give in. And there's a third side to this, which is the suspicion that at least I have, and I'm sure one or two people in Munich as well, is that the demands from Alaba's camp were perhaps always designed not to be met. That this was not really a negotiation. This was just a very drawn-out process designed to run down the contract and enable him to have a free transfer next summer, where he'll be in a much better position to go to big clubs who wouldn't have been able to buy him this year or pay him the kind of money he wants next year. Whereas there's a free agent in US parlance, he'll be cheaper. And you can then give him the money that you would otherwise have given to the club for buying him out of an existing contract. So I think that as much as this might look as if, you know, oh, you know, the Alaba camp, they've made a huge mistake, now the offer's withdrawn, I think there's also a good chance that that's what they actually wanted all along.
Would you think that there even might be a chance that they try to sell him in winter to get some money out of this situation?
I think it's extremely unlikely for two reasons. One, I think that the kind of money you can realistically get for a player who's got 6 months on his contract, I don't think really moves the needle much at Bayern. I think Christian Eriksen, when he moved from Spurs to Inter, the fee was, I think, 20 million euros, which was a lot. And maybe they will think about it if somebody comes in. But at the same time, if they're still, you know, going strong in the Champions League and he continues to be very, very important for them on the pitch, I think they'll probably say, you know what, that's not enough for us to sell. And the other reason is, I think that the 20 clubs would be crazy. I mean, Inter buying Eriksen because they somehow thought that he's going to be the missing link and get them to win the Serie A was already a big gamble, which backfired. I don't think anyone's going to do something similar, because if Alaba agrees to a club, he'd be quite stupid, frankly, to move when he still costs money. Why wouldn't you get the 20 million euros for yourself six months later? So I think it's not impossible, but it's unlikely. And the interesting thing now, of course, is Bayern, if they are categorically adamant that there is not going to be any rapprochement and any reconciliation, they can, of course, now look towards getting another centre-back in. And that puts them perhaps in a useful position, because it's still only early November and they can actively plan now for what happens next summer.
It'll be really interesting, Rafa, yeah, won't it, about the centre-back situation, because you've got Luka Hernandez, who's been playing left-back, but kind of made his name as a centre-back. I know he won the World Cup as a full-back, but known as a centre-back at Atleti. Got Niklas Zula back from injury, and I think he's a fabulous defender. Alphonso Davies, we've seen, has blossomed at left-back, so that would allow Hernandez to move in there. Benjamin Pavard would like to play centre-back, but I guess, Rafa, it maybe puts them in the mix for Deo Upamecano, because there's going to be an almighty scrap for his signature next summer, and you would think Bayern would be in that mix, wouldn't they, with some of the world's top clubs?
I think they'd be stupid not to. His release clause is quite reasonable, believed to be 42 million euros. Of course, he will cost a lot of money. He's still quite young. But yeah, I'm sure they'll consider him. But as you said, they're not exactly short in the centre-back positions. But I guess without Alaba and Boateng, they need at least one more next season, and Upamecano is probably the best one in the league at the moment who doesn't play at Bayern, with the exception of Mats Hummels, who could always come back for a fourth spell, I guess. but that's certainly going to be one of the considerations, I'm sure, Deo Upamecano.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, before we go, I think we need to talk about Leipzig and Gladbach. The sort of win for Gladbach that just underlines and confirms, I guess, the kind of praise and the plaudits we've been handing out to them over the last couple of weeks. They were very unlucky not to beat Real Madrid, which would have been a huge sort of marquee result for them. But the performance was very strong. at least for the first 85 minutes. And they followed it up with a win against Leipzig. Looking very good. First, let's praise them before we have a go at Leipzig's flaws. Gladbach, just good. What else is there to say?
I had the chance to meet Marco Rose last week, and I was actually very impressed by his willingness. That's how he was speaking about Borussia Mönchengladbach, to kind of get them on another level. He also said it in after the match against Real Madrid, but he said it also afterwards. He was saying that we have to go onto the pitch with the idea that it's not out of your minds to win against Real Madrid. And I think they had it also against Inter Milan and how they approach the Bundesliga. I think they are now trying to establish a mind frame for the whole team, but also for individual players, that they have not only looking where they are right now, but where they could be when you look at their potential. And I think it's interesting when you see it at the team. There are some younger players like Florian Neuhaus, Thuram, Player, and so on, where the potential is probably bigger than what they are able to do right now. And I think that's very much how Marco Rose is approaching the whole thing, and you can see it. So it's not like this kind of super optimistic out of the blue stuff. You can see there is a lot of in this Borussia Mönchengladbach team, and maybe they are even better than we think they still are.
I mean, that's really quite unusual in Germany, isn't it? That coaches are open about the idea that they want to expand on the level that the team is playing in. It's usually all very, oh, let's see, and we'll have to think from game to game, and, you know, oh, we have to be modest and humble, da 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 da. And secondly, I think it's quite courageous, because you know always that people will be very, very quick, especially in Germany, to slap you down for those ambitions if it backfires. And people say, oh, yeah, haha, you know, they wanted to be the next Dortmund, but they are only the next Leverkusen because they finished fifth instead of third. So it's a bold move to take. But I think also I feel it's necessary, because I think you need that push if you want to transform this club into something different. Or let's say if you want to continue on this path towards success.
Well, I think the psychological aspect is very important for Gladbach at the moment. So I think it was really important they saw it through against Leipzig. Jan Sommer, the goalkeeper, talked about that afterwards, saying that they needed to actually get the win, having got themselves in a really good position, like they did against Inter, drew 2-2, like they did against Real Madrid, again drew 2-2. So it's about proving to themselves that not only can they compete at this level, but they can beat these teams. And I think they're learning all the time as a group. I think it was very, very important that Max Abel, the sporting director, was able to keep that group together. They didn't lose the key players that they might have done. And they've done all this without Denis Zakaria, who I think is really, really important for them in midfield. And I think, say they get a win against Leverkusen next weekend, then in the first seven games, they'll have faced Dortmund, they'll have faced Leipzig, and they'll have faced Leverkusen, and they might be in good shape. And so I think, given how many games they've had already, and the quality of games and quality of opponents they've had to face, has to go down as a very good start to the season.
And to add here, we've been talking about rotation, and Borussia Mönchengladbach was starting without Thuram, Stindl, and Kramer, and it was for them one of the top matches of the season, and so it's interesting that they can do that now and still get away with a very good result. And you also see there that the depth of the squad is better than last season. And you can see that the players have, or the whole group has adjusted more to the ideas of their coach.
Yeah, and I think in a strange way, Gladbach perhaps also among the winners of the coronavirus crisis, because none of the big clubs came in for their players, or none of the middling clubs came in for their players either, which I think otherwise would have happened after that season. But Leipzig, they lost heavily against Manchester United in midweek, where perhaps they were beaten slightly more strongly than the performance suggested or warranted. And then they had another defeat against Gladbach. Is this just the kind of problem that is inevitable? I recall Julian Nagelsmann mentioning even last season that without training, it's going to be difficult for the team to improve. And he made the same point again, that there's just no time to train and just doesn't have a lot of work, ability to work with players. Or is it kind of just a reflection of, you know, them having one or two issues that they find perhaps harder to deal with?
No, I think they're okay. I think they were in the game at Old Trafford at 1-0 down. I thought they collapsed in a way that we wouldn't have expected, in a way that Julian Nagelsmann wouldn't have expected. And he seemed genuinely angry after that defeat and a bit baffled as to how his team had fallen away so badly, because you don't associate that with them as a group. And I think he felt the performance was okay against Gladbach. They're up against a good team. They made some chances, didn't take them. So I think in general, he'll feel that there aren't any huge issues. But I think you're absolutely right, Rafa. He is a guy that gets quite complex information across to his players, and he needs time to do that. He's always thinking about improvements he can make. He's always thinking about how they can react to the opposition and what they can do. And it's tough to do that, tough to have that kind of information download if you're playing every few days and you're playing high pressure games every few days. Because having got to the semi-finals of the Champions League, even though it's a tough group, to not qualify for the knockout phase this season, I think would be seen as a big setback. So, you know, they've been under pressure from the get-go, and we'll see how they deal with that. But as a team, bearing in mind they haven't had Konrad Leimer, who I think is hugely important for that team, and Marcel Sabitzer only just back from injury, I think they've done okay.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there is the inevitable loss of rhythm and performance without one or two of those players. I think Sabitzer, as you said, has been missed and is not quite back to his best. He had quite a calamitous introduction at Old Trafford, giving away the penalty and making a mistake for another goal. But they should bounce back. They should be pretty competitive. And they're, of course, in action against PSG, which provides another opportunity for Julian Nagelsmann's side to strike back, and provides another opportunity for him to shine in, no doubt, what would be a very interesting outfit. Can't wait to see what he'll
We're not allowed to talk about his clothes, apparently.
Well, not to him, perhaps, not to his face when he's just lost a game. But I once read that his wife helps him with picking out the clothes. Maybe it's time for someone a bit more professional to help out there. But that's for another day. That's all we have time for today. Thank you very much, Christoph and Kevin. Thank you very much, dear listeners. Please come back next week for when we discuss the big Bayern Dortmund showdown. Until then, bye-bye.